So change kind of our eating patterns from the summer, should we say. And maybe if you're cooking some meals at home, here's a tip. I think, you know, we do it in the commercial kitchens also. You always have to have your ingredients ready, mise en place, as the French call it, everything in its place. And when we're cooking foods to order, of course, we don't start every dish with chopping the onion or slicing the mushrooms. We have these things already prepared. And I think sometimes, besides, you know, the shopping, planning and shopping is probably the most important part. If you kind of have at least 3 days out, maybe it's hard to plan longer than that, but if you can plan 3 to 4 days out, get through the midweek, it should help you a little bit. You know, if you're rushing around, you're getting home from work, and then you've got, you know, an hour to get a dinner on the table, or maybe you're considering packing some lunches if you brown bag it, as we used to call it. If you have a plan, and some people choose to prepare all their meals ahead. I know people like that that will take, in fact, we're going to have Dream Dinners people on October as a guest. There's a outfit in Flemington that does that. You can go there and they shop everything for you. You can prepare your meals, freeze them, or I imagine, well, I think she'll tell us more about it, but the idea is to have your meals ready to go so you can just take them out and heat them up, or at least have the main event, especially if it's a soup or a stew or even a roast or a quick sauté. You might have your meats already done, or you might have it done in the sauce and then just have to make maybe some rice or noodles or a salad. And there's meal kits now that you can order in, a little expensive, I guess, depending on where you live and what your time is worth, or if you have the time. It's an alternative to dining out, which, of course, competition for us in the restaurant industry. And for years, people, it was just so convenient to go out, and was, relatively not that much more than dining home, especially for a family on the go. And it gets you out of that routine of the same thing, you know, taking some frozen, you know, chicken patties or nuggets or something and throw them in the oven or microwave something that's already done. When I used to, on my day off or days off, I used to cook. I would prepare food, and I would prepare food with the future in mind. In other words, if I had the oven on and I'm roasting chicken, I would roast two chickens, and we'd have one for dinner. After dinner, I would break the other chicken down into the meat, take all the bones and stuff, you know, and get rid of that, but just to store some protein for another dish. It could be on a pasta, it could be on rice, anything like that. Or if I made, we like to call Sunday gravy, right? Make lasagna and have some meatballs and sausages, or even a nice pork stew to go along with that. But you're making a pot of sauce, make a bigger pot of sauce, and then you have some leftovers for another night. If you like to cook things fresh every night, or if some people, I don't like to eat leftovers, or maybe you don't have leftovers, maybe you ate everything. But having ingredients, so say you have, if you get onions, and this helps with your cleanup too. If every time you go to prepare things and you've got to wash and sanitize your cutting board, if you have some onions, we use those little pint and quart deli containers, the translucent ones, and we wash them and reuse them for ingredients. Same thing, you might, not the the cheap clear ones, but you get good containers. And much as we don't like to throw things like that away, of course you can recycle them, but we reuse them, and you can get a few washings out of them, especially if you're just storing ingredients. So we'll have onions diced up. If you have celery, and you'd store that with water so it doesn't oxidize. Diced carrots or sliced carrots, we keep those in water. We'll have potatoes already cubed and ready to go if we need some for a soup or for mashed potatoes. And keeping in these containers, and of course they're pints, they're quarts, easy to store. And then you have your measurement there if you need, you know, a pound of diced something, you know, potatoes, you've got pint there that's basically about a pound, and you're ready to go. And this might help. I think what you're getting with these the meal kits is you're getting, you know, things that are already sliced, ready to go, or they're selecting the produce for you. And I know that's part of the shopping thing. You like to buy whole vegetables, but then you've got the prep, the peeling, and the waste. Sometimes it's easier to get something that's already prepped, but very expensive. And like I say, if you have your knife and your cutting board, and you've got a little bit of extra time, if you do some pre-prep with some ingredients, then it cuts down on the time you spend preparing the meal. You're not doing everything from start to finish. You know, proteins, of course, you want to make sure you're storing them properly, the coldest part of the refrigerator, or it could be even that you have some that are in the freezer. Freezing things, the reason I kind of hesitate on freezing sometimes, when you buy a food that's already frozen, a commercial refrigeration, much faster process, you don't have the cell damage. It's just the integrity of the product is better. I don't care if it's frozen vegetables, meats, fish, anything like that. When you freeze things in your own freezer, even if it's got a circulating fan in it, it does not freeze the products quick enough. So once in a while, you know, you tuck something away. Okay, I want to freeze some shrimp shells to make stock, or I've made some stock, I want to freeze some cubes. That's fine. But sometimes if you're trying to freeze pans of food or meals, first of all, you've got to make them. Then you've got to get them cooled down. You can't put them piping hot into the fridge or the refrigerator. You know, it's the food processors, if you will, they have the means to do that. They have cooling tunnels that cool the product down. I know when I was in school at Cornell, they were doing frozen entrees, and we do them in half pans and then boil in the bags, and we would cycle the product through the cafeteria. But we had a blast freezer that went to 40 below zero, so you put some trays of food in there, even if they're fairly hot, the things are frozen inside of an hour. So you've got that quick freezing process, bring it down to temperature as fast as possible. And then, of course, reheating. You can reheat them in the oven, in a slow oven. You could probably... I know there are vacuum sealers now. A lot of people do that. Still, they get your proteins and vacuum seal them, because air is and temperature are the enemies. If you don't want them drying out or oxidizing, or if you're marinating something, the good heavy-duty freezer bags, or if you have one of those vacuum machines where you take the air out of things, then you get a little bit longer shelf life on your proteins. So just a couple of ideas, but... planning ahead is probably key. If you have a plan and a little roadmap, you know, we do it every day. We make a prep list. This is what we need to do for service today, so you don't forget anything. But I guess, you know, shopping and planning, it's worth probably an extra, you know, half hour to an hour of your time to get some ideas. And also, in many operations, non-commercial, they have rotating menus. And honestly speaking, you know, most families, you eat similar foods all the time, right? You have your pasta night, or you have your steak night, or you have, one night, you know, you're doing the burgers, you're doing a stir fry, you're having a soup and salad meal. But we pretty much eat what your people, your family likes, and you kind of rotate with those items. You're not doing this endless, you know, 365 different ways to cook turkey. You're not eating the same thing. We're omnivores. We like variety. So, but you still will find within 2 or 3 weeks at the most, you're going to repeat items. And as I said, there's sometimes, even if look what happens when you get your takeout. So you have one night where, okay, this is our treat. We're gonna order in. And people pretty much, that's the pizzerias and restaurants, they keep a record of what you've ordered, and normally they can either remind you or suggest, say, oh, hey, this is what you got last time. We have you on file here, and sometimes it reminds you of something you may have forgotten. So they even though, you know, human behavior is predictable, and we do like to eat similar things regularly. So now we've got Oktoberfest coming up, though. Next big food celebration. You know, it's not really in October when it starts. Oktoberfest this year is, I think, September 21st. Usually it's by the third week in September. It's a celebration. I think it was originally from a prince. It's kind of like the wedding party. And it's beer and basically beer and sausages. I mean, there's other German foods we like to offer at that time. Whether we're a German descent or not, we'd like to get out there. It's a reason to celebrate. And we always feature things at Jake's at the restaurant. And in fact, a couple of items that we used to just sell through Oktoberfest. We always start mid-September, and we'll go through almost the end of October. Give it a good long run. But the schnitzels, we have a Jaeger schnitzel and a chicken schnitzel that both ended up being so popular that we put them on the menu. We have them year-round. And so it's getting, we've gone with Oktoberfest basically to back to the sausages and try to get some good varieties. And here's where today, I think, well, we're going to talk about a nice horseradish mustard to serve with them and how to cook some sauerkraut. You've got to have that sauerkraut, right, and some potatoes. So we'll look at, I like to make sure you start with the right product. Makes your life a lot easier. And I'll mention a couple of sources for you, some ideas, and get into Oktoberfest, Chef Joe's Table.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
We'll be right back.
Jeff Bill's Table at WHCRDB, the voice of business, Hunterdon Chamber Radio. So for Oktoberfest, good sausages, and I don't mean just your standard. I mean, it's funny, the American hot dog, right? Kind of one of our, I guess we call a national dish. Probably have lots of them. But the German butchers that came here, they really make a lot of different kinds of sausages, more than just your bratwurst and your frankfurter. And these are worth seeking out. And I think for something like this, I would go for, it's a little easier now because of shopping online, and the shipping is good, the product, it's in the cold packs there. You can get product from anywhere in the world. And there might be some, maybe from where you grew up or something you remember. You know, there was this great item that I had, and you can usually get it shipped. And barbecue is big, you know, if you have a different regional barbecue. But sausages, you know, for me, in growing up Kitchener-Waterloo, Ontario, the Schneider's factory is there, and we do it mainly for the bacon and the hot dogs. They do make some other types of sausages, but there's a Schneider's in Waterloo, Illinois, that does a lot of traditional German sausages, and they have an online store. And you can get the different, mainly, you know, the true German sausages, mostly pork, maybe some veal, but they do wonders with how you can get, you know, 25 or 30 different combinations or seasonings, or the ratio of fat to meat, or is it coarse ground, is it fine ground. The finely ground ones, I guess you call them almost emulsion, that's difficult to do at home. You got to puree things to, I guess in a food processor you could do it, but almost so it's a little bit sticky. You're making it almost like a mousse out of the product. And then there's other ones that, you know, you do a coarse grind. You're familiar a lot of times, say, Italian sausages, you know, it's fresh sausages, a little bit different story. And most of these would be smoked or cooked, the German sausages. That's one of the nice things about them, especially for a quick meal. They're already cooked. You're just going to warm them up. We use Schaller Weber Jake's for our Oktoberfest. We buy through our supplier. They're a distributor for Schaller Weber. And if you're from this area, of course, they're, you know, well known. They have their own restaurant, I think, next to the plant. But I think they just went into one of the food halls too. So they do a good job. The nice thing about having a storefront restaurant, you can go in there and sample and say what you like, and then of course go right next door and buy it. Geysers in New Jersey. I remember used to find those products in the supermarket. I don't know that they do that anymore, but they do sell direct. And that would be another old-fashioned, old-time family business, making things, crafting the old way they learned in Europe. And I'm sure wherever you are in the country, of course, in the Midwest, there's, I'm sure, a ton of local sausage makers that have things that, you know, maybe they adapted, maybe depending on where they came from in Europe, or what's been passed down in their tradition, or what the local people there like. I know for me, for hot dogs, I mean, I always go back to the Hoffmans in Syracuse there. They have the white snappy grillers, and those are a lot different than a regular hot dog. They're made with pork and veal. There's no nitrites in there. It's not pink. It's a white sausage, finely ground, a little bit of spice to it, and just change the way you think about hot dogs. We used to call them conies. And I say, I can source those at a store locally, but, you know, when I first moved down here, I mean, I had some shipped down because couldn't get them around here. But these are the things that kind of make those products, even though there's national brands out there and there's big companies making tons and tons of stuff. The smaller producers now, or the independent ones, are doing a good job, and you can get a hold of the product. But I think, you know, we usually go Weisswurst, white sausage, always like that pork and veal alternative. The Knackwurst is probably the flavor most like, or the hot dogs are used to. It's just thicker, fatter, but it would be a smoked, and you can get beef or beef and pork. And that's, again, another familiar flavor. Bratwursts, of course, are famous in our Midwest. And it's a, bratwursts are more of a coarse ground. And you'll have those already cooked. I think some companies may offer a raw version. But usually you get those. And that's just ground, coarsely ground pork with some seasonings in it. And one of my favorites that I can get is the Bauernwurst, the farmer's sausage. And that, it's a smoked, cured product, but it's coarsely ground, not fine ground like a Knackwurst or a Frankfurter. And a little, I think oregano or marjoram, a little different spice flavor. Maybe a little mustard in there, mustard seed, I'm trying to remember. But really nice flavor. Again, different texture than a Knackwurst and a little bit more character to it. We've had the little Nürnberger brats or Nürnberger sausages. They're small ones. They're kind of fun, especially for a snack. But all these different varieties, they're all cooked, and we like to treat them with respect. And for me, many of them, I like them just steamed or simmered with my sauerkraut. I don't brown them up. And then there's other times, oh, I like the, especially the, you know, the white sausages, you might want to, for appearance-wise, you might want to brown them up. And we offer them both ways at the restaurant. We always, for years, we did the traditional cooking the sausages right on top of the sauerkraut and serving them that way. But now we've flashed them on the grill, get a little, you know, not burnt, not too black, but just a little browning on there. It adds another flavor element, and many guests prefer that method with the sausages. But either way, you don't want to overcook them. They've already been cooked once, and the problem I found with grilling them or pan frying them is sometimes, you know, the skin can burst when they get too hot. You've got, you know, especially the natural casing. That's another thing you want to look for. You don't want the collagen casing. You want good natural casing on there. You want a little snap to it. And you get them cooked too much or too fast, the casing will burst. And it's not like the meat's going to come tumbling out. And some people might say, oh, well, that's how I know it's done. You can always, you know, they check them with a thermometer, the inside. But they really don't take long to cook. You're just depending on the thickness. The Knackwurst might take a little longer, but these sausages don't take that long to heat up. As I said, and you buy it, you know what you're getting. It's net weight. You're not going to have any loss of trimming. There's no prep to do. It's simply warm them up. And traditionally now, with the sausages, beer, right? Oktoberfest. It's a big party. And there's some food restaurant operations that kind of do that, like the beer hall, beer garden type thing. But the Mars and the Oktoberfest beer originally was made in March, and then it would be stored through the summer months. Germans typically would drink more of a lighter, a Weiss beer, maybe with a little slice of lemon or something, something a little more refreshing in the summer, and then go back to the Marzen beer in the fall. And that's one. But from that storage, laying it down for a while, really takes on a nice flavor profile. In fact, I like that style of beer. For me, it works all the time. But that, think of the it's a good lager. It's not an ale. And matches well with all kinds of food. And aside, if you're not into beer, you don't like beer, of course, a good dry cider would always work. we will often use, we sometimes do our sauerkraut with that. We use apple or cider in there, but especially in the fall in the Northeast where the apples are there, good cider is always nice. And, of course, German wine, Riesling wine. Again, New Jersey, New York State, Long Island, the Northeast. Riesling grape, similar climate to Germany where it's used in much of their wine. Good flavor, a little, you know, some acid, but sometimes they're off dry, a little bit sweet. But that's fine, especially with something like these sausages, which, you know, have some salt to them. Of course, that's part of the curing process. So those the wines, the Riesling would go very well with the Oktoberfest also. But or even a non-alcoholic. Nice thing about sausages too is they're kid friendly. Again, they're already cooked. There's no tender, and you can vary them with different sauces if you like. What we like to do is, of course, mustard is the probably expected accompaniment. And to find a Dusseldorf mustard, I think, again, online you could probably find about anything. But we make sometimes that mustard is a little sweetness to it. When you're doing mustard, some people like to make their own, grind up the mustard seed, and the just remember that, you know, the coarser the grind, the less spicy it's going to be. Remember that the whole grain. You've got some mustards. I remember some French ones. They're almost, just the mustard seeds in there, barely held together. Very coarse, mild flavor, and then you go the full end of the other end of the spectrum. You get the mustard powder, the flour, the Coleman's, and mix that with a little water, and that you've got some very hot mustard. But we'll find we've got a nice one right in between that. We're going to break for news at the half hour. We'll be back and see if we're going to serve our October sausage and circles table.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The Treasury Chief discusses the administration's plans to privatize mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They were put under government control back during the financial crisis in 2008. Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin says today,
the first step is we are in the process of negotiating with the FHFA on our current lines, and we expect in the near term we'll have an agreement where we will allow both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to retain their earnings, which will be a significant increase in capital and a step in the right direction.
He was speaking on Fox Business Network. Congress going back to work today after a summer break. The Senate and House to finalize individual budget bills after reaching agreement on a broad two-year spending plan. In the House, Democrats are calling again for impeachment proceedings. This is USA Radio News.
Starting route now. Turn right at Fortress Mountain. Turn left at Mount Hood. Head south to Moab, Utah. Continue on the Great North American Test Drive.
Run with us on a John Deere Gator XUV 835 with our quietest cab ever and optional heat and AC and a four-wheel independent suspension. It's built to run where no one else can. Nothing runs like a Deere. Search John Deere Gator for more.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
The stars. back at Chef Bill's table. HCRDB. So, for our mustards, so we came up with a horseradish mustard. So people do like sometimes a little spicier. I used to be able to get a Dusseldorf for even a deli mustard. I think Gold's makes one. That's pretty good. But we'll take our country-style mustard, like Golden's. You want it, you don't want the bright yellow mustard for this. You want the brown mustard. And that's got a little bit of spice to it, but... we take, so you take 2 cups of that, or your favorite brown, good brown or country-style mustard. You want a little bit of grain in there, not very coarsely ground, but not finely ground like a Grey Poupon, like a Dijon mustard. So for two cups of that, we'll do a half cup of horseradish and 1.5 teaspoons of superfine sugar. And that's put that little tiny bit of sweetness in there. And if you didn't use sugar, I mean, if you keep simple syrup, or if you like another sweet flavoring, by all means use it. But a little sugar in there, and then 1.5 teaspoons of dried tarragon. Of course, if you have fresh, you would use double that amount or so. But again, that not to dominate, but the tarragon seems to complement the mustard very well. And then 3 tablespoons of canola oil, a neutral oil. You don't need good olive oil for this, just need a neutral oil. And what that does, you think of mustard, of course, as a fat-free condiment. And we're going to add a little bit of oil. What the oil does, it kind of spreads flavors around your palate. To all this 2.5 cups, you're only using 3 tablespoons, but it really does make a difference. Especially when you've got the horseradish in there and that little bit of canola oil. Trust me, it does make a difference in the mustard. A pinch of white pepper and salt, of course, to taste. And you've got yourself something that's a little bit different than an off-the-shelf mustard. And you can kind of control it. You know, if you want more horseradish, you want less, do you want it sweeter? It's up to you. The other funny thing, I didn't really know until last year, the curry ketchup, the currywurst. I guess that's big in Berlin. And seen it done with many different styles. I like it best, again, with the Bauernwurst. I want that smoked sausage, but with the different spice profile. But a lot of times it could be Frankfurt, it could be Bratwurst, it could be anything. They make a curry ketchup. And you can make it from scratch, from the tomatoes and vinegar and sugar and spices, if you have a recipe that you like to do that with. Or you could take your favorite ketchup and flavor it. And basically we would add some Worcestershire sauce, the Lee and Perrins, the good stuff, and maybe a little onion and garlic. There's recipes for it all over, different combinations, but add some curry powder. And we just use the regular yellow blend. I mean, we get one from a supplier. You may have your own curry blend that you make, but it would be the yellow stuff, commercial stuff, not really the true masala that we would use in Indian cooking, but it puts that curry flavor in there. And you heat the ketchup with that, and I've said this before, when you take even a product like ketchup and cook it, it alters the flavor of it. Even though it's something that's already very, very well cooked, even tomato paste, when we deglaze a pan, we're making a sauce or a red meat stew, you want a little tomato paste in there, or even chicken or pork, we always saute it a little bit. It kind of opens up the flavors, even though it's a highly concentrated cooked product, cooking it again does help. And look at barbecue sauce. That's what this the curry ketchup kind of reminds me of. It's almost like you're having a barbecue sauce on the sausages. And that's typically a snack served with the French fries. And They would sprinkle more curry powder on top, if you like. Really different flavor, but it is good. It works. And, of course, the sauerkraut. And here's where, again, you can go quick and just buy a can of sauerkraut and drain it. It's already cooked. But we like to do it better than that. We get what we call a barrel-cured sauerkraut. And also the nice longer shreds of the cabbage. Sauerkraut is simply fermented cabbage. It's just cabbage and salt, and let nature do its work. You could buy it in the store refrigerated, the bags, which I would prefer to the canned. And we do want to rinse it, though. It's got the cure, the it's not really vinegar. It's got that nice, you know, tart liquid in there. We like to rinse it off, even, you know, one or two times in a strainer. Let it drain well. And you're trying to get it a little more mild. It was just a way of preserving cabbage, but we don't want it too sour. So once it's rinsed, we have some fine chopped onion. We will start this with oil instead of butter. You don't need butter for this. Oil is fine. And we saute the onion a little bit. And you can slice it in, you know, thin slices, strips to match the sauerkraut, or you can dice it, whatever you like. We'll do it sometimes in the strips to kind of match up with the strands of sauerkraut. But you get the onion soft first, not browned. And then you add the sauerkraut that's been rinsed and drained and let that cook a little bit. You're not, again, not looking to brown it. You're looking to start heating it up. Because sauerkraut, quite frankly, I mean, you can eat it right out of the bag if you like. You can put it on sandwiches. It's fine. It's like a nice, crisp accompaniment. But here we're trying to mellow it out. And so now we have a liquid we have to put in there. And oftentimes, we would put apples, grated apple or applesauce in there, and maybe some white wine. But your wine, if you use a, and I'm finding for this even, a Riesling is ideal, especially if it has a little sweetness to it. Got good fruit flavors in there, but a Chardonnay would work well also. But if you don't have or don't want wine, beer is a good substitute. You could take it in that direction with some just regular, you don't want to use a stout or anything, and I wouldn't use anything too hoppy either. More of just a nice Pilsner lager or an ale, a simple ale. A cider oftentimes ends up being our choice, a hard cider. Of course, you're cooking it, the alcohol is coming out, but the fermented is dry, not as sweet as regular cider, but you can use regular unfiltered apple cider also, and especially around here, we have the local farms, producers. You can get good pasteurized cider, and if you're not using the alcohol or you don't want to, the cider is probably one of the better things. You know, of all the things to put in there, the apple cider is probably our favorite. So a little apple cider, and then we actually do some chicken broth. And you think, oh, I've got the salted cabbage, and I'm adding something that's salty. But remember, you've rinsed it, and you've got your other liquid in there. So a little bit of chicken broth would help. And if you like caraway, you can add it at this point to flavor it, or you can even sprinkle the seeds over top afterwards if you like. So we'll let this simmer for a while. And for us, with the sauerkraut now, if you're making, say this one-pot meal, with the sausages, you just simply lay the sausages, kind of nestle them in the sauerkraut there and cover the pot and simmer it. Or you could, put it in a low oven. You don't want to brown them, but you want to heat them through. And, of course, the sauerkraut flavors the sausages. The sausage flavors the sauerkraut. It's a beautiful thing. But I like cooking them all together. Up till a couple of years ago, kind of difficult to get smoked pork loin if you can get it, or smoked pork chops would always be a welcome addition to that. We used to do the by the loin. We actually did our own a couple of years. We would cure and smoke our own pork loin, boneless, and use slices of that. But pretty much people, they like the sausage. I think the smoked pork could be a dish on its own in the sauerkraut. Also, regular pork loin or chops doesn't have to be smoked. I like them smoked for this use, but anything, you know, pork chops and sauerkraut. Also, pork ribs, spare ribs would work well also. If you like your sauerkraut, but when you treat it like this, when you take the sauerkraut and treat it right, it really does change. It's so much different than just eating it straight out of the can or out of the bag. Alright, the other potatoes. Favorite food, right? Can't have sausages or any kind of celebration like that without some potatoes. And some simple boiled potatoes would be nice. With a little bit of parsley butter on it. Mashed potatoes we would serve. For years we did our smashed potatoes, the Yukons with the skin on. A little bit of scallion and cheese and sour cream, and they're kind of like a loaded potato. And those work well, too. But we've got to actually break for our sponsors here at the quarter hour. But we'll talk about a couple of German potato recipes to go with our Oktoberfest platter.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Back at Chef Bill's table here at WHCR-DB. So we need potatoes, and of course the nice the Bratkartoffeln, German fried potato, home fries, can't beat them, right? We do them at the restaurant. Of course, we've been offering them with the chicken schnitzel, and as a side choice for our other dinners. Basically, just have usually a boiled potato, peeled, and you can cut it into slices, and then sometimes folks will use bacon fat to saute the potatoes in, and even crisp up some bacon, which could lead you in another dish that we're going to talk about, the German potato salad. And then salt and pepper, and you've got some nice sliced fried potatoes. Steakhouses always offer them. Hash browns, home fries. Those two kind of get mixed up sometimes. Hash browns, I think of the shredded potatoes, and home fries are more maybe diced, or these are sliced. I've worked in one place where we would take the cubed cooked potatoes, the slices, and they've put them in the deep fryer, kind of like a homemade, toss it with some butter or some oil. But we take the baking potato and we wash them, cut them in quarters lengthwise, and then in slices, like at least 3/8 of an inch, good slices, because you want them to stay together. And we steam them, maybe 15, 20 minutes, depending. Or you could parboil them. And this is the thing when you're frying the potatoes. If you start from scratch, it just takes a long time. You can do it. For a Spanish tortilla, you would start with thin sliced potatoes and then saute them for a while till they're cooked. But here we'll steam them and then spread them out in a pan to dry out. And we'll toss them with a little bit of canola oil and salt and pepper and smoked paprika. I used to use regular, just good Spanish paprika. I like it. It helps brown it, but that mild flavor, very good, but the smoked paprika is even better. And this way you can you don't have to use bacon either, or bacon fat. So we'll toss them with the seasonings, and what we'll do is spread them out, and we'll bake them for a few minutes to let the seasoning set in. In the meantime, in another pan, we'll saute some diced onions till they're soft. You don't want them too brown, because this is a case where we're getting our product ready for service, is to be able to do a nice home fried potato in a very short period of time. So we have the potatoes, they're seasoned, the seasoning is set in there, we mix in the onions. Now you have something that, if you want to make that ahead and store it, it's fine, because everything is pretty well cooked. When you go to serve them and brown them up, it's just simply a little butter or oil in the pan, saute pan. And toss these, literally in a minute, you can have nice German fried potatoes. Or you could make it, take your boiled potatoes, slice them, season them, and go right to the pan with them. But as I say, we have to stage these, prep earlier in the day for nighttime service. So this is the one that works for us, because we can cook them fast. Freshly browned, you're not cooking them ahead and holding them on a steam table or something. They get all soggy and overdone. So that's one thought, the simple German fried. But a lot of places will do potato pancakes. And I like these, of course, with a good pot roast. Well, they're a good snack even. Here's where we're using the shredded potatoes. And again, we want the Idaho, the baking potatoes. You want a good starchy potato for this. So let's say for 8 servings, or 4 if you're really hungry, 2 pounds of baking potato. And you'll need 2 whole eggs, a quarter cup of grated onion. We'll take the white onion and grate it on the box grater. Save the juice. It's just you want it almost like onion puree. A third of a cup of flour, and if you want to keep these gluten free, you could use potato starch instead. A teaspoon of salt, and then if you have, of course, bacon fat is the best way to saute these. So we're going to take our potato, peel it, and we'll shred them. again, on the box grater, or if you have an attachment on your food processor, you can do it that way. But you really want to shred them. I shred them into a bowl, and we're going to want to squeeze them out. You want to squeeze the extra water out. Now, here's something I do. I'll take the potatoes, squeeze them, transfer them to another bowl, and there's going to be liquid in the first bowl from squeezing out the potatoes. So I save that. I let it settle, and what's going to happen is you're going to see it separate. You'll see some of the potato starch will sink to the bottom, almost like sediment in say your clam broth when you steam clams or anything like that. So you're going to see some starch settle out. What I'll do is pour off the water part, and I save that, it's essentially potato starch, and put that back in the mix. Now these, and you want to add the onion as soon as you can. The potatoes, once you've grated them, you can store them in water, but they will oxidize pretty rapidly, meaning they'll get brown. So if you toss them right away with the onion juice will kind of slow that down. You have your beaten eggs and the flour. And again, a third of a cup of flour, just enough to hold it together. If you want to keep it gluten-free, you can use potato starch. And salt, pepper you can put on afterwards, but you make your little patties. And some nice hot oil or clarified butter, bacon fat. And you'll scoop about a third of a cup size, and just kind of, a nonstick pan's the easiest way. And it's a little bit thick, so you just kind of press it down with the back of the spoon, make a little patties there, and cook them. Now, if you're doing batches of these, you keep your oven at 250 degrees, and as you finish the potato pancakes, you can store them in the oven to keep them warm. And these happen to be something, too, that you could make ahead, and then warm them up later. They do reheat very well. Served with them, of course, applesauce is a favorite, but I think lingonberry preserve would be another neat thing. That's a wild cranberry, something a little bit different, but any kind of sweet thing. Some people do sour cream. I kind of like them the way they are, but they are good with a little bit of fruit. Apples would probably be the most traditional. Now, their German potato salad, of course, we get the best of both here. We'll take, six to eight servings, 3 pounds of potatoes. And these, you probably want more of the regular waxy potatoes for these. We don't want the dressing to soak up too much in there. The regular boiling potatoes, chef potatoes. And we're going to boil them in the skin. And then drain them, let them cool off a little bit. The peel, it's very easy to scrape the peel off once they're boiled. And we'll cut them in quarter-inch slices. And then you can just keep those at room temperature. Now, for this amount of potatoes, you get a half pound of bacon. Dice it up and cook it, render it slowly first so you get the fat out of it. And then you want to cook it till it's crispy. You spoon out the crisp bacon bits and set them aside to drain. Save the bacon fat. You're going to add a half cup of chopped onion. Saute the onion till it's nice and soft. We'll add a quarter cup of cider vinegar, a quarter cup of water, salt about a half teaspoon, and a quarter teaspoon of pepper. And you let this cook together. It'll make a little bit of sauce. This we will, with the fat and all, the bacon fat, everything goes in there. This is a kind of a like a dressing. And then you'll just blend this with the potatoes and garnish with the, you can blend the bacon right in there with it, the bacon bits, and then sprinkle with a couple of tablespoons of chopped parsley. And you'll have German potato salad. I hope you enjoy Oktoberfest. It's nice to celebrate something in the fall. And we'll be back next week. We've got to cut out now. We'll be back with Janet Levine next week with Chef Peterson. And happy cooking.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The day after tomorrow will be the 18th anniversary of the attacks that have become known as 9/11. Today, the U.S. Senate Homeland Security Panel taking a look at new threats facing Americans and looking at what's happened since the attacks on September 11th, 2001.
To look back and assess what has transpired since that awful day. What actions were taken, what has and what has not been effective, and maybe most important, what has changed.
That's Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who chairs that Senate panel. Meanwhile, the Taliban says more Americans will die after President Trump called off what was to be a secret meeting at Camp David yesterday. The president canceled the meeting after a suicide attack last week by the Taliban that killed an American soldier. And this is USA Radio News.
I'm at the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C. with Dr. Barbara Natterson Horowitz, evolutionary biologist and physician.
There's a form of fainting that happens when people get stressed because the excitement triggers a slowing of the heart. Why this happened didn't make sense. The heart shouldn't slow down. The heart should speed up when there's fear. But what I've learned by working with veterinarians and learning about how animal hearts work is that young animals, when they are scared, sometimes their heart rates get very, very low, and that causes them to be very still. And when wild animals become very still, it often makes them safer from predators. One possible hypothesis is that slowing of the heart rate in response to fear in our species is actually an evolutionary echo from our vertebrate ancestors, for whom the slowing of the heart was life-saving.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
A key Republican U.S. senator wants President Trump to show his cards when it comes to what he'd approve when it comes to gun reform. Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri saying,
"We're not going to vote on bills on the Senate floor that the president's not willing to sign. The president needs to step up here and set some guidelines for what he would do."
Blunt was speaking on NBC's Meet the Press. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he will only call bills to the floor for a vote that he knows the president will sign. President Trump saying this morning that he knows nothing about an Air Force crew that ended up staying overnight at his Scottish resort at Turnberry after a refueling stop not long ago. The president tweeting today that the crew, quote, has good taste. Trump also insisted that it has, quote, nothing to do with me. Those words were tweeted in caps. Find us online at usaradio.com.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Purdue Pharma is expected to file for bankruptcy. Two state attorneys general on Saturday saying that the big drug company is expected to file for bankruptcy protection now that the settlement talks over its role in the nation's opioid crisis have hit a snag. Purdue and its owners have offered to settle about 2,000 lawsuits against the company for $10 to $12 billion. The attorneys general of Tennessee and North Carolina, though, say the talks have stalled on how to distribute the money. The AGs say Purdue's owners have rejected two proposals and are refusing to offer any additional solutions. Antitrust investigations into Google and Facebook are expected to formally launch this week. Around 40 attorneys general will be at a news conference outside the U.S. Supreme Court later today to make the announcement. The investigation will look into whether these large companies squeeze out competition when it comes to digital advertising, information markets, and consumer choice. The probe will also look into how the tech giants handle privacy issues. The bipartisan state-led effort will reportedly complement some federal investigations that are already underway. And the latest movie about Batman's archenemy is the big winner at the Venice Film Festival. The Joker was the winner of the